The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 96. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefer.com to stay up to date with the latest guests and anything else that I have going on. Real excited to have Chris Cavillo with us. Chris is the strength and conditioning manager for the Queensland Academy of Sport, and just a great guy. Got a chance to be connected through him to him through one of our sponsors, Elite Form, and just doing some really, really cool things down there in Australia. And so wanted to bring him on the show. We talk a little bit about, his journey. You know, we talk about it kind of a normal day and the staff set up there at Queensland Academy of Sport. We get into, sports that he's worked with, rugby, track and field, things along those lines, and doing some really cool research right now with some occlusion training and some things like that. So I know you're going to get a ton out of this episode. Before we get started, I want to make sure we recognize all of our sponsors: Ignition APG, Play USA, and Sorinex, and of course Elite Form for coming on as a sponsor for this season. All four do a fantastic job. Elite Form, like I said, turned me on to Chris, and you know what's really cool about what they're doing is obviously they're selling worldwide, and they're able to make some really cool connections, and people are taking their pioneering, game changing product and making it better and things like that. So, you know, I encourage you to go to their website, EliteForm.com. You know, watch some of these videos that they have with, you know, what they're doing at Oklahoma and Kansas and Texas A&M and the Queensland Academy of Sport, and just see how people that are using technology, how they're integrating it into their program and doing it seamlessly. And I think there's no better than Elite Form with what the way they're doing that. I encourage you to check those guys out, reach out to them, follow them on Facebook or Twitter. And, just ask questions, and see what, if it's a product or something that's right for you. But, they have their paperless system where they're able to push workouts and then obviously they're, able to do things at the rack as well. So encourage you to check out EliteForm.com and just for anything else, reach out to them and tell them how much you appreciate them sponsoring the show. Strength Coach Basic Training, is a product that created basically because I would get a lot of people requesting to do internships that could not necessarily just sacrifice the time to come, and do one with us. And so we basically put our entire internship program online. You would go to strengthcoachbasictraining.com, go down, sign up, and basically you'll get prompted to do a request to join the group Strength Coach Basic Training on Facebook. And I've put the whole program here mostly because one of the major things with becoming a young strength coach and getting into this field is the networking piece. And so we have all of the videos, lectures, assignments, and projects on the right side here with the About section, bonuses. We have strength conditioning manuals that people let us put up, things like that. But the cool part is being able to just interact with different coaches from around the world and talk shop, and talk about the projects and talk about different things. And so, you go from instantly being one strength coach to, over 160 something, 170 people in the group. So, encourage you to check that out, Strength Coach Basic Training. Know you'll get a ton out of that, especially if you're a young strength coach. just not getting into this field, or maybe in a place where you're not getting an opportunity to bounce ideas off of a staff. Maybe you're a one-man show or one-woman show, and you just need some additional input and things on those lines. So check that out, Strength Coach Basic Training. Sit back, enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, welcome back. Have Chris Cabilio with us. Chris is the manager of the strength and conditioning manager for Queensland Academy of Sport. He is in the middle of his work day, and I'm at the end of a very long work day here. So we've worked hard to try to make this coordinate. He's down in Australia, time difference, those types of things. But man, I truly appreciate you making the time to spend with everybody and working it into your day.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. It's great to be here and on your show. So I appreciate you getting in touch with me.
Well, Chris, you know, I know that you were a former track and field athlete, and I know that probably kind of led to a career in strength and conditioning. But you know, talk about your journey, kind of why you got into the field, and then the steps that you've kind of taken to land there at Queensland Academy of Sport.
Yeah, sure. So when I first started, I was doing a sports science type degree, wasn't quite sure where I wanted to go. And I think what I'll come back to all the time is mentors, so my dad, a good mentor, sure. Sort of suggested, son, I better think you should look at what you want to do when you finish. And I thought I'd try a couple of different areas within the fitness industry, strength and conditioning, cardiac rehab. Anyway, I started with strength and conditioning and just fell in love with it, really. So that's how I really started. I just started there and never went on to the next thing. Found with my background in track and field that because of the coaches that I've worked with, they gave me a good grounding and technique, and I used their principles that they would use when they used to coach me to help coach other athletes. Mm. I just really enjoyed it. So I did my own. I went off my own back and started off, when you first start in the industry, very hard to get a full-time job. So I used to work, 5, 6, 7 jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Schools, personal training, used to just volunteer my time for free, just because, I realized the value in networking and people and just getting out there and just getting experience in the industry. So I just spent, when I was almost finished uni, instead of they have a set practicum usually, I'd already been doing my own prac and, obviously made sure that I tried to align myself with really good people and was just lucky to land a little bit of work here and there. And did that probably for 6 years, just couldn't crack it in the big gig. But, I thought this is my internship. I created it myself and just learned off people. My actual throws coach invited me. I asked if I wanted to go full time and go to England and work with Bath Rugby. So prior to that, I did a little bit of part time at the Academy Sport beforehand. I got some work with the Wallabies during the World Cup in 2003, which was a great experience to
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Big, big professional team. And unlucky to win. If you're English, you would say they deserve to lose. But and then went to Bath, and that was still a learning experience. Some positive, some not so good. But I always, no matter what the experience, positive or negative, I'd always take something out of it and say that, well, it happens for a reason. If the coach bollocked me because they might not like what I've done, there's a reason behind that.
Right.
Probably, I do a lot of self-reflection, even now. I do it automatically, driving home. I spend that time thinking, what did I do today that I liked? What didn't I like? And then, try to learn, continue to learn and continually push myself.
Absolutely.
For the athlete.
So then
when I got, probably England was the big turning point. I guess, I don't know about yourself, but there's a time in your life that, I'm doing okay in this industry.
Yeah.
And then one or two things happens, you realize, man, I know nothing. the world is so big out there. And I was pretty lucky to meet some great people over there. So there's one guy, His name's Dr. Christian Cook. So he worked with UK Sport, the All Blacks. Mm-hmm. He's doing some work with England Rugby now. And not only he's a professor, he's a well-known expert in the world of salivary testosterone and cortisol. So I ended up doing a project with him in England with the team that I worked with. And it was one of those things, you know, as I say, everything happens for a reason. And that kind of then helped set me on another path to say, well, I'm enjoying my S&C stuff.
Right.
But there's a time, I want to use a different part of my brain now. And that just exposed me to a bigger network of people. So I have my S&C, but also have, I really enjoy that sports science side. But always I'm thinking, well, it's all good and well that we're doing all this wonderful science, but we're at the coalface. And at the end of the day, we've got a limited amount of time. And how can I maximize that
That's
time?
Exactly
so
right.
I've really tried to always say, it's about the athlete. What can I do to maximize their performance?
No doubt. No doubt. Well, there are a couple things to point out there. Just, and again, we talk about it on the show quite a bit, but, you know, whether or not you're in Australia, the United States, you're around the world, you know, the importance of networking and mentorship, I mean, it leads, it's the starting point for everything. And so I can't, you know, stress that enough to young coaches to make sure that they find out, reach out to, and continue to find mentors throughout your entire career. And that's, you know, part of the reason why I do the show is to continue to identify mentors for myself. But, you know, we talked a little bit off camera, but you mentioned it there as well is, you know, the culture of the weight room, you know, and working, you know, you've worked in professional rugby and, you know, in a very team setting. Now you're, you know, mostly working with track and field, triathlon, and kind of in a more individualized sport and individualized type of thinking. But when they walk into the weight room, it's still the importance of the training environment and the culture and those types of things. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you do from a, you know, making sure that culture is set for, you know, the proper enhancements that you're trying to do, as well as some of the differences in your style when you're working with a team sport versus maybe a sport that's kind of more individualized.
Yeah, good question. So, you know, environment is key. I think the big thing is that an underlying principle is knowing your own philosophy. You know, what are you about? What do you want to get out of it? And then letting your athletes know that, like, so they're clear with expectations. I don't come down with a hard line. I try to tell them nicely. But when I coach, that's when I use my voice. But so, yeah, it's just being really clear with your athletes. These are my expectations. And I think they respond to that when you say that that's not what I expect from you or this is what I expect from you. So I always like to bring my athletes together and this actually works well even with individual athletes because if you look at all really good individual athletes, most of them have a good squad around them that they train in. So how can you kind of bring that kind of feel to someone who's an individual? And if you're like a triathlete, they train in a big squad, even a thrower, if you can bring them in and then, you know, create a conversation and then kind of reset and refocus, I think you can bring the principles from team sport in. I try and sometimes lighten the mood initially, so I try and read where they're at. I always get around and say, how are you feeling today? You know, you look at all this wonderful data metric stuff, everyone's doing all these databases. And sometimes it concerns me. I think it's fantastic, these numbers are. But it gets away from what good coaches do. They talk, they communicate, and they build relationships. So that's what I'm about, you know. I build a relationship with my athletes, whether a team athlete or an individual. So, you know, if it's a bit down, like, you know, I try and lighten the mood a bit. Football's great because I say, right, you know, tell me, you know, Joe Smith, tell me a story. I heard something on the weekend. So it just kind of like just settles down. They forget about their external stresses for 1 minute.
Right.
And they say, right, guys, time to focus. This is what we're about today. This is what we're going to do. And then the session starts. And then, you know, depending on the session, I think the big thing is once you get the culture right, you know, the session almost runs itself. It's just like spinning plates. It's you know, you do your look. There's certain guys who love that one-on-one. You know, show them the love. There's other guys that, you know, you need to leave them alone, but then every so often just say, man, I love what you're doing, really good. So real positive feedback. And I try to use my voice a fair bit, you know, not always yelling and barking, but times when I rev them up, times when I, you know, go up and whisper something quietly and say, mate, that's looking great.
Right.
And that's just from relationships, who responds well to what. And then if I can, I try and bring them in at the end, you know, try to bring one or two positives about the session, because it's all about just that reinforcement, saying, guys, you're on the right track. You know, and people like to be told, you know, what they're doing well, what do you like that you really saw in that session. So I try and emphasize that and tell them that, you know, they are doing well. And you know, even if it's a 2.5 kilo PB, man, that's, or PR as you guys sure. say, you know, that's worth noting. And I really make sure everyone's aware of that. Because I always think, so I worked in AFL, Aussie Rules, so the Gold Coast. And our first couple of seasons were pretty lean because we had a young squad. So it doesn't matter, you know, in that case, I always think no matter what happens in any other element of their training, I want them to go, oh, it's gym time. Like I want them to come in and know that they're going to work hard for me, but they're going to have a good time.
Right.
So, and like, you know, if you're having a rough season or a tough season, it's got to be something you enjoy. And sure. if I can take their mind off football or their, you know, whatever's happening for that period of time, you know, for me, that's also part of my role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, let's get into the training a little bit. You know, when the guys walk in, I mean, let's just take track and field or your throwers, for example. What's a normal training session look like? I mean, you said you bring them up, but then what's the next thing they're doing?
Yeah, usually I, you know, if they've got any their little bits and pieces, prehab or rehab or any kind of things that they need to do, I let them do that first, because that's when it's time, when they step onto the platform, that's when the clock starts ticking.
Right.
So I let them do that first. So in my environment now, it's the times are a little bit looser, whereas in football, you train from 1 to 2. That's right. It. So it's really easy. Whereas these guys, I say, okay, you know, get in there at 2:30 for a 3 o'clock start. So I give them a little bit of latitude. And then once 3 o'clock comes, I say, I need you ready to be on the platform. So have a bit of a chat to them. How are you feeling? Make any adjustments prior to it. And then once they're on, we just go hammer and time. So it's, my background is just, I like to lift heavy, technically well, but I like to see some tonnage being shifted.
Absolutely.
So I like to start with bar warm up. So I think it's a great way to continue technical, ingrainment and technical improvement, and it gets that little bit of the heart rate up. Make sure they're nice and warm. I always stick, you know, unless I'm doing a split routine, but I try to do whole body routines most of the time. So there'll be some form of Olympic lifting, big double leg, big stimulus, and then just depending on the day, you could go. Then you still your big movement. So if it's a leg dominant day, you know, there's a squatting movement. Mm-hmm. And then I move down the program. So I'll always do legs. And then if I'm going to bench on the same day, if I do,
right,
then you'll go to the bench. And then after that, we'll come in all that, what I call more ancillary or secondary. So, you know, single leg work, assistance exercises that will develop. Like if it's a pushing day, you know, what do I do to develop my bench?
Right.
Like, and I see a lot of programs, and all they do is bench press. And it's like, well, you know, one of my sayings that I'll always say is one way to improve your bench is to bench. one way to improve your squats to squat. And you see a lot of people that do two warm-up sets. Well, actually, no, that's not even done poorly, but they do their 3 sets. No, I'm done.
Right.
So, well, what else are we going to do to develop it? Are we going to do a single leg? Are we going to do a hip thrust, a reverse hyper? You know, something else that's working on other areas. Just going to help develop the squat, because I always look at, when I look at a program, I go, what's my end product want to look like?
Right.
What do I want them to do? Strength number wise, but also technically, and what's their key lifts? And once I have a clear picture of that, I then just work backwards from that point. And I think that's, you know, it's a simple philosophy, but it's worked well for me no matter what. What do I want my athletes to look like and be able to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you mentioned, you know, lifting heavy, and obviously that's, you know, what we're all about, and, you know, that's kind of the meathead in all of us, right? But comes with that is the, obviously the hormonal response, you know, and you're working on your PhD right now and have written a lot of articles and done a lot of research regarding, you know, testosterone production and cortisol. What, based off that, kind of how have you taken that information and applied it to your programming?
Yeah, it's hard initially to do, you read a paper, and this is the thing, you have science, you read the paper and go, well, I haven't got an analyzer to analyze testosterone.
Right.
But what you can do, there's two elements to this. Firstly is the almost the psychophysiological side, so creating your environment, you know, when they're coming in, you know, setting the tone, as I said, having the right kind of music, getting them in the right frame of mind. So, you know, if an athlete's a little bit, you know, talking negatively, I actually would say to her, I want you to walk out, I want you to come back in ready to train, show me you're ready to train. Little tiny things like that, how you give feedback as a coach. There's some really good papers from Christian Cook, you know, talking about the use of in a skill setting, like football is fantastic, like using image of a skill execution, but using yourself or an opposition as vision, and then using positive or cautionary feedback. So when you kind of think about it as a coach, I think most of the time we're always positive, but, you know, I'm always aware of my language, you know, rather than saying, oh, you know, sometimes you just got to be blunt with them.
Right.
But, you know, saying, really like this, this is fantastic. So try to find those positives out of them so they can get some sort of positive affirmation. When you look at, I guess, the actual setting of the program, pretty much what has been done from, you know, all strength coaches do pretty much hits the spot. It's your big global movements that are going to get you bigger spikes in testosterone.
Sure.
Some of the research is saying lower and upper at the same time has better responses once again than if you're just doing, you know, upper body session. Look, at the same time, is that everything's individualized.
Right.
And we've always got to take everything with a grain of salt to say, you know, how do we truly know? Because, you know, 5-1s could do well for me, but 3-5s could be, you know, at 85% could be better for you. But there's times when you just got to get in and train. So it's being aware of that psychological side of setting your environments and correctly so that you can get the most out of your athletes. And that's probably the biggest driver when you look deeper into it. It's natural levels of testosterone isn't necessarily going to get you bigger and stronger, but it's the behaviors associated with it. So, you know, you look at, you do any Google search on it, it increases motivation, determination to succeed. It's associated with winning. It's associated with strength. So what it does is it makes you want to train harder.
Right.
And when you train harder, you have more mechanical stress on the body. You lift more load. The body adapts to that. And that's probably the biggest driver with where natural levels of testosterone can enhance your body.
Absolutely. Well, how about the opposite, though, when you've got an enhanced amount of cortisol or, you know, and you have to recover, you know, are there any things that you're doing that you feel are unique or, you know, unique in your program as far as recovery tactics?
Yeah, I think that's really an individualized thing. And when you talk to the athletes, you know, once again, I'm going to refer back to literature to come forward again. And a lot of that stuff is really subjective. You know, they say, what was the biggest marker of feeling recovered? And it's the question, how well do you feel recovered? So if it's, you know, having an ice bath, fantastic. If it's wearing compression wear, because the mind can help drive a lot of these things. So if the body's feeling recovered, yeah, it's actually going to help take over and decrease your cortisol response. Sure. Sometimes we need these responses. You know, when you're in a heavy period of training, you need that to adapt.
No doubt.
You need to adapt to stress. So it's not always necessarily trying to remove those stresses, but, you know, teach the body to adapt to it, which is the flip side of respecting the natural response.
Sure. Well, we share a passion for technology, and I know you guys just integrated your facility with Elite Form, and I know you use the Inclusion Club. And how have you integrated technology into your program and made it seamless so that it's not really? I mean, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, we want to get on, you know, the barbell and bumper plates. You know, it hasn't changed in 100 years. You know. We want to continue to train, but it's great to have these tools that allow us to get some great feedback and things. But you know, but doing it in a manner that doesn't affect the training session, that environment is critical.
Yeah, and I think you hit on the point there. It's a tool. Like at the end of the day, you got to lift. You know, it's a barbell and the plates. It's you against it. And whenever I look at technology, it has to be seamless. It has to not be a hindrance to the athlete. I think your footballer's environment is a great environment to talk about, because if it doesn't work, if it's a hindrance to them, they'll be off it in a minute, won't they?
Right. No doubt.
So, and like you just look at it. So I like my feedback. I think it's really good. I use my eyes a lot, but it's nice for the athletes to see, you know, how fast is the bar traveling? How much power you're producing? And when I came to the Academy of Sport, I just looked at historically. We have all Olympic-based athletes here, and the amount of quality athletes we came through. You know, I said, well, wouldn't it be fantastic if we had all those numbers? So if we had, you know, we have Olympic champions, and if we could compare a 16-year-old swimmer to, you know, the top athlete we had come through, we can use this comparative data to actually say, well, we think, you know, these are the three areas that you need to really work on according to what our statistics say. And so that was the first area. And the second area is, because I like my feedback, I said, gee, wouldn't it be great if we had some vertical transducer that could integrate straight into those numbers? So when all the numbers come through, rather than double handling data, it's all in one place. And then another colleague or mentor of mine, Scott Murphy, so he was with the Wallabies for a while and now with Geelong AFL Football Club. Okay. He put me onto the guys at the Rabbitohs, who just won the NRL competition, and showed me. He said, you got to see the system. And I went down and, you know, it just blew my mind. It was exactly what I wanted. So we talk about environments and engagement. The players love it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very tech savvy, so they like that. So firstly, that's our first engagement. It's simple to use. And that's, you know, these are all things in my checklist in my head, simple to use. Gives them the extra bit of feedback. And what they don't realize, well, they may do, but the numbers are coming back to us, and we can do more detailed analysis than we've ever been able to do. But it's not, if we're not double or triple handling data, it's all coming through the one portal.
Right.
And so that's where I just see it's just very useful and simple. And I guess that's the thing, is like within all these wonderful bits of technology, you know, I think we as coaches, we need to look at the simplicity, because, you know, at the end of the day, the simple things work well.
Right.
You know, making it too complex.
No doubt. And I know I think you hit on a subject that's really powerful, in that, you know, so much of what we're trying to do anymore is identify potential talent, you know, and that selection, you know, and so like you said, or if you can identify the ability in a 16-year-old that of a future Olympic champion, I think is phenomenal. When you got data, you can do that, you know. You know, and so that's fantastic. You mentioned earlier, you know, we talked about the Inclusion Cup, and I know you're working on that as part of your PhD. Talk a little bit about that, because it's very interesting.
Yeah. So with the occlusion cuff, it could be used in several ways. So once again, this is a tool. So for those who don't really know, the basis behind it is that at loads of 20% of your 1RM, you can get gains in strength, size, so if you kind of start thinking about that, you know, in an initial rehab phase, when you can't load the body, load the joints, you know, you need some stimulation of the muscle. So how it works in two ways. One is an increased activation, because what you're doing is you're occluding blood. Typically, it's around the quad. You're occluding blood flow. So because you're decreasing oxygen to the muscles, your slow twitch or your aerobic fibers tire out quicker, and then your fast twitch, your bigger muscles start kicking in. And so that's why you get that, you know, when you have a knee injury, for example,
right,
and you say, well, just do some single leg squats, and you know, you can't feel the pump, as we say. So within two sets of 15 at body weight, just doing a little core squats, you can now get the pump.
Yeah.
And so because you're then having that activation, you're obviously getting that initial quad bulk back, where usually you have massive atrophy in such a quick period of time. On the flip side of that, whether it's the activation, but it's also a massive hormonal improvement as well. So it depends on the markers. So increases in testosterone, IGF-1, growth hormone, decrease in myostatin. So all these really good markers, which are associated with hypertrophy or anabolic states, it's actually been shown to improve those states. So
that's great.
You obviously can help the healing process accelerate that. Where it fits into a performance enhancement scenario with fit athletes, you can actually use it as a PAP method. There's a few studies using it as a passive PAP. So before you warm up, you just sit there and you just occlude, reperfuse every 4 by 5 minutes, and then do your warm up. They've actually shown, like in some running studies and swimming studies, improvement in performance, and that possibly is through that hormonal improvement. So once again, if you're able to improve your natural levels of testosterone, you increase you know, your ability to express power and speed. Some of my work has shown that if we have higher in rugby union, if we have higher levels of testosterone before we compete, we would win. It is something as simple as that. And when you think about football, for example, it's an aggressive based sport.
No doubt.
It all fits together nicely. And this just fits in with the whole, we're just enhancing what we've got. And that's all it is. So it's naturally there. How can we do it within the natural constraints of being ethical?
Sure.
And then the other way you can use it in your performance enhancement settings, you can actually squat quite heavy with it. So you think about mechanical stress, how do we stress our body? And that's the thing that gets the improvement. So, you know, if you're, like I've been squatting, 220, 240 kilos, so it's for 500 pounds
right,
with them on.
Wow.
And so you can just take the edge off your training. So rather than having to go at 95 to 100%, you can just bring it down a little tiny bit. And you think about an in-season scenario in football, when you get a lot of contact, you know, to go really heavy is hard.
Absolutely.
You know, because they're pretty beat. So you're able to still have that massive stimulus, but just take that edge off a little bit.
That's fantastic. I have to look into that. Definitely some more. Well, buddy, we always end the show here with some resources. Give us, you know, the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Yeah, probably keep it simple, really. the best piece of coaching advice is get to know your athletes, actually.
Right.
When I first started working at Bath, the head coach actually said, spend time to build relationships with the athletes, because once you've built that, you can get them to do whatever you want them to do. And that's been so true. So I invest heavily in that. And then when I want them to work, when they, you know, you think about when they're tired, and they're sore, but you really need them to work for you. If they've got your respect and your back,
right,
they'll work for you because they trust you. And that's really what it is. I think, you know, as a coach, communication styles and relationships is just as important as, you know, the finer points of should I be doing 3-2s at 90% or 95%, or should I be 3x3?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. It all starts with that. I mean, you could have the best program on paper, but if you can't get them to do it, it doesn't mean anything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I know you said that you're not a big quote guy, but give us some sayings or maybe just a good piece of just a good nugget that you use with your athletes then.
Yeah. So I don't really do a lot of quotes, but you know when they're in the gym and you know you're trying to teach them a clean or something and they're thinking about 1,000 things, you know, that they get down to it and they're in a really great position. It's like set it and forget it. Set your position and just go because there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. I just think of silly things all the time, you know, rip it and grip it, grip it and rip it. Just to get them into training. Sure. That intent, how do you get intent, and sometimes I tell us, one way to improve your bench is to bench,
Absolutely.
Just looking at getting back to the basics, like, what do you want out of your athlete? And well, 3 sets, that's probably not going to cut it. You know, that's why you haven't improved. You got to work hard at it. There's no way around it.
No doubt. Well, give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Yeah. So websites. I like Diesel Crew. Think they just have, good sound knowledge. I really like their routines, how they piece them together, they just think outside the square using sleds, tires, grip stuff, football.
Yep.
I integrated that. So when I first went to England, I just pilfered the site. I think it's fantastic resource. And it increased my knowledge. And from that, then you start looking at, Ross Training and Zach Evanesh. So a lot of US sites, and then even like look at Scott Sonnon. I kind of like the idea of flow. And sometimes I'll use those words, I need you to flow, I need you to connect. So I'll use words, I need you to connect with the floor when they're lifting. So little things like that where I take just bits and pieces from everybody.
Absolutely.
Apps, that's a funny one. I keep asking everyone, what's your favorite app? And no answer is, it's a game. It's Candy Crush. So no one's ever given me a good one. And I use it for my camera.
Right.
Being a tight ass, whatever's free. Your Ubersense, Coach's Eye, I'm sure there's hundreds of camera systems. I think just having something like that is really handy. But I don't really use an iPad too much.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Sure.
Books,
yeah.
So one thing that, I don't know whether it came across, but I see value in how we communicate as a coach. And sometimes I think that finer point of being able to build relationships, read athletes. So Dale Carnegie has How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Great book.
So that was, really good read. The Tipping Point, Michael Gladwell, I think it was The Tipping Point and Blink. Just about, Blink is from memories, like just that intuition. You just sometimes, there's no science behind, today I want you to do this. And you can't explain it. And what it actually is your years of experience as a coach, and you've read things and you've done things yourself. I experiment hard, so I'll read something and go, that's really interesting. And I'll go in the gym and I'll just play. So if I have a mate, we'll play for half an hour to an hour. So what happens if we do this? What happens if we do that?
Right.
And because you're doing the movements, you just go, I don't know what it is. This movement, this exercise is going to be perfect for you. And there's a new book out by David Joyce. It's High Performance Training for Sports.
Great book too.
It's just a really good resource. So a lot of the stuff that I've been reading for my thesis bits of that actually appear in it. Back, a lot of my colleagues have written for that. And I just, you know, beyond the periodization book, well, I actually haven't read a lot of books per se, but what I'll do is, you know, Westside Barbell bring out their, you know, just like
book
like
of programs, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you just like read their training programs, and they have a really nice blurb around that, you know, your Jim Wendler's 5-3-1s, The Cube by Brandon Lilly. And, you know, whether I take that and I bastardize it, I apologize if I do, but it gives me really good concepts to think about to say, well, and I'll go away and I'll experiment with myself. So I'll use myself as a guinea pig and go, this will work really well with this athlete, but this program, I need to change a little bit. So, you know, you look at your 5-3-1. So, you know, I've changed that to a 6-4-2 for triathlon. So I've been able to, you know, it's only a couple of reps, but using those same concepts. I mean, actually the triathlon coach said, I just need my triathlete strong. So I'm really big on that. So even if you're an endurance athlete, why do high repetitions in the gym? Because you're just flogging the same energy system.
Right.
Why don't you get them strong? And so they can produce a little, they're not going to get the same strength gains as my throwers, but, you know, they can
produce a limiting factor, power. Yeah.
They can punch a little harder when they need to.
Absolutely.
You're not going to do that with high circuit work in the gym.
Absolutely. Great point.
Yeah.
Well, buddy, I appreciate it, man. This has been fun, and I still think it's the coolest thing, being able to talk with somebody halfway around the world and pick up a few nuggets here and there. And, you know, I've followed you from afar, so it's great to get finally an opportunity to sit down and talk shop with you. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much for your time. Great work you're doing too, Ron. Keep it up.
Thanks a lot. Great. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.